Hi, this is Charles from democraticfundamentalism.org with a special report of the News in Review for Friday, November 23rd, 2002. This report about John Fitzgerald Kennedy and remembering the day he was assassinated and the dream he left alive. Well, you know, we've all gone through the experience of September 11th, 2001 in our own ways, together. It's easy to point out how we grieved as a nation, and still do. I was considering how people younger than me could understand why people, especially older people than me, talk about something called Camelot, their sadness at the loss of President John F. Kennedy. See, Friday was the anniversary date of the assassination of the president. Thought it might help you understand a little more if you heard my story about what I experienced that day. One other thing I think you might find interesting, too, is I'm 47, and when you look at the issues and social climate of our population's demographics, I'm a little too young to really be a baby boomer and a little too old to be in what is referred to as Generation X. But I understand the issues of all three basic factions, and there really are three different factions. Today, I received an email from a visitor to this website. He was 30 years old, and the essence of his email was this. He said, "I'll do anything to see real democracy finally be used in the United States." Every time I need a reminder of why I'm doing what I'm doing, statements like that, people like him, they're the reasons I'm doing what I'm doing, and for myself, I have to admit it. There's a generation gap upon us. It's three ways instead of two, like in the 60s, and I'm kind of smack dab on the cusps of two of them, feeling a lot like a negotiator in a way. I keep thinking about my experiences, the possibilities, good and bad, that could occur in the near future, and I think, well, you guys, you older guys out there, can you remember this? Just think back and remember this. What kind of world are we leaving for our children? Remember when we asked our parents what kind of world they were going to leave to us? Remember what that was about? You may wonder what that has to do with the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. I only hope I can tell you in a way that lets you understand it, even just a little. I was 8 years old and home from school with a cold the day John Kennedy was assassinated. Now, my father loved to build wooden toys for me. He did different things with each of his six children, and that's what he did in order to relate to me. He built cars, houses, little wooden people, all sorts of things. But the thing he made me that I loved the best was a simple rectangular wooden box that was made to look like an old-fashioned telephone switchboard operator's connection console, just like you see in the old movies. It wasn't very fancy, but little lights lit up, and he supplied me with a set of aviator's headphones to listen. We lived way out in the country on a 5-acre ranch in the Santa Cruz Mountains that was a parcel which had previously been a part of my grandparents' and my great-grandparents' farm. We had a garden in the summer that was the horse corral in the winter. It was easier to get to the horses when there was bad weather, and it fertilized the garden, too. It was probably about half an acre. Now, my father didn't exactly relate to people the way most normal people do. He was supposed to have been an off-the-charts genius, and from what I have learned, he actually probably was. So he liked to have political discussions with me from the time I was 5 or 6 years old. And well, he was a die-hard anti-communist Republican. But for some reason, he really liked President Kennedy, even though Kennedy was a Democrat, and even though he had associations with Richard Nixon. I'd hear him talking about Kennedy and Eisenhower. He was an incredibly politically opinionated, if not politically active, man. But I remember him talking about justice, equality, and the economy, and the military, and though I'm not so sure I came away with his opinions, really, but the books I chose to read as a kid were biographies of our founding fathers, their speeches, and their accounts of their lives. Well, ever since my father made me that telephone switchboard I was talking about, we'd go out to the edge of the garden in the evening, just as the sun was going down, And he'd have me pretend to call President John F. Kennedy. We'd talk about school, the weather. I'd tell him what my dad said about him, and I told him I liked him a lot, too. And then he'd say he had to go, so I'd unplug the cords from the switchboard and put it away for another day. I had a good imagination for an 8-year-old. Then, like I said, I was homesick when President Kennedy was assassinated. I watched it on TV. I listened to it on the radio. I thought maybe our country was under attack. I thought about my dad talking about communism and socialism and capitalism, and I wondered what would happen in the future. It was a lot like September 11th. We lived way out in the country, yet I was afraid to go outside. It was a very frightening day. I didn't know what was for certain anymore, what I could trust and what was deception. So little of it made sense, like an earthquake that shakes the ground from beneath your feet. Among other things, to me, I had also lost a friend. In a way, John Kennedy was my imaginary friend. No, I never really had any imaginary friends, but I remember my father following the trial intently, and almost betting his life on Jim Garrison in the trial of Clay Shaw. He said it would be the thing that would reveal the truth. When Clay Shaw was acquitted of complicity in the death of John Kennedy, my father seemed very disappointed and sad, because my father, like most people I've ever known, never believed that President Kennedy died at the hands of a lone assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald. I've watched the films of the crime over and over again. And you know, authorities didn't want to hear the story of Jack Ruby. He wanted to tell them things despite his many requests to testify. They didn't want to hear it. Jack Ruby was the man who assassinated Oswald before there could be a trial. In the 3-month period surrounding the time of Kennedy's assassination, the leaders of 9 other nations were assassinated as well, including the president of Vietnam, where we were beginning to fully engage in a war. After all that, my father still started telling people he was a libertarian and to question authority. I can't help but notice that as I write this, I'm seeing an interview on TV about how Saddam Hussein killed off all the other people in his country who had the power to mount a political or military offensive against him. It's a classic strategy described in a little book national leaders often read called The Prince by Machiavelli. You owe it to yourself to read it. It would explain a great deal to you. It's very short, very inexpensive, and it is relevant, especially when you add the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy into the patterns. It was only last year that I came to understand what people really meant about John Kennedy when they talked about Camelot. I watched a movie starring Sean Connery about King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. I had never really read much mythology. I finally came to realize, though, it was the vision Kennedy expressed and the one I so believed in. The one that everyone talks about, the way things should be, and the one that they've given up believing could ever be possible again, because in the end, our leaders had been taken from us. It was a dream worthy of dreaming, too, of true justice and truth and equality and freedom, of a government taking full responsibility for the well-being of its citizens, whatever that meant, whatever it took. It was about true unity and community and nationalism. And you can talk about globalization and integration and von Hayek and Keynes and economic theory and planned and managed economies all you want. But it still adds up to the fact that when John Kennedy was assassinated, it was the beginning of the end of a dream, or at least that's what some would hope. And a hope of a government that would serve the interests and well-being of its citizens over the interests of the wealthy and the powerful. It marked the resurgence of a paradigm that people in the 60s called the military-industrial complex. So when you hear people talk of President John F. Kennedy and his assassination, and Martin Luther King and Senator Robert Kennedy, understand that these people were the people of the older generations who defined and expressed the true character of this nation. People now addressed by political adversaries as liberals with disdain and ridicule. disdain for the intent of the founders of this nation, disdain for the world we really intended to provide you, the young people, the one we wanted ourselves, the older people, as we requested our parents to provide us. You know, I remember what Ted Kennedy said, you know, the dream will never die. And then remember that it's up to you and me, all of us, to demand it and create it, because like the truth, it's yours to have and hear and require. Everything is possible. All you have to do is want it. The dream did not die. It lives in our hearts and imaginations, the part of us all that wishes things weren't the way they are. That's the answer that Camelot was to provide. In honor of that dream, that Camelot, and the man in America who symbolized the intent and heart and soul of this nation 39 years ago, it's part of what we lost. Well, let's bring that dream back to life. Let's live it. It's really the greatest gift of an honor we could possibly bestow upon him on this anniversary of his death, as well as ourselves. John Kennedy was a man. He was a human being with all the same kinds of flaws and trappings and feelings that all of us have. But what he showed us was how to represent a vision of a future that would only get better and better by speaking from our hearts and saying what it is we really stand for and believe in. And after all, unless we do that, how will anyone know? With that, I'll only say, John, we miss you and your example in many, many ways. And thanks for the lessons and the legacy you left us to discover inside us all. This is Charles, DemocraticFundamentalism.org.